When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Save big on brunch for mom, all in the Kroger app. Get 16-ounce packs of flavorful Angus 90% lean ground sirloin for $4.99 each with a digital coupon. Then buy two, get two free on 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hello, and welcome to the Over and Back Classic NBA Podcast. I am Jason, and with me as usual is Rich. Hello, Rich.
Hello, Jason.
So we are back. We're a little bit late on this episode, but you've had some personal setbacks that have delayed things. But we are finishing up our series on buzzer beaters in the NBA playoffs. And we're going to talk about buzzer beaters in the NBA Finals. There are six that have occurred, buzzer beaters that have won a game in the NBA Finals. No series winners, but you know, some exciting stuff nonetheless. And I think this will be a good topic to wrap things up as we transition into the NBA offseason.
Absolutely. Yeah, there's some pretty fun ones here, some pretty great games, some pretty ones that you may have forgotten, ones that you may have never even known existed, and then obviously some pretty iconic ones throughout this as well. But yeah, I mean, a buzzer beater in the finals, I mean, it really doesn't get any better than winning a game of the NBA Finals on a last second shot as time expires, or in one case, shooting free throws as the time expires. But hey, you know what, they're not all that exciting. Some of them are just, but hey, you still won an NBA Finals game via a shot, a last second shot. A crowd can either react, you know, jump to their feet knowing, hey, I just saw, you know, a guy win an NBA Finals game, or get very upset that, hey, I just watched a guy beat our team on our home court for the NBA Finals. So yeah, these are as good as it gets, and yeah, obviously we're a little bit late. Obviously the NBA Finals have wrapped up by this time, but hey, this is still pretty good, and this is our show. It's evergreen. We're talking about stuff from 1957. It hasn't changed. Right.
It has not changed. No, it has not.
Cliff Hagin still hit the shot, baby. It doesn't matter.
Yeah, it's all good. Yeah, our first one, who is about someone who we would never want to change, Cliff Hagin. This occurred April 11th, 1957. This was Game 6, 1957 NBA Finals, St. Louis Hawks, Boston Celtics, one of the great finals in NBA history. We've talked about it before. We've talked about the series. We've talked about, you know, Game 7 in particular, which is one of the great Game 7s in NBA history, at least in terms of dramatics. But at Game 6, no slouch either. So setting the stage a little bit, key players for the Hawks. You've got Cliff Hagin, we're going to talk a little more in detail about, Hall of Famer, great player. You got, you know, the immortal Bob Pettit. You got Ed McCauley, former Celtic, who went to the Hawks this year's hometown, St. Louis. You got Slater Martin, came over from the Lakers dynasty. This game, not in one of his career highlights. He was 2-for-18 in the game, but he was a standout in his career. Meanwhile, for the Celtics, they're rookies. You got Bill Russell and Tom Heinsohn. You got Bob Cousy, who's 6-for-20 in this game. But notoriously, Cousy and his backcourt teammates, Bill Sharman shot like something like 4 out of 50 in Game 7. Game 6, they weren't really hitting the shots either. Frank Ramsey, one of the key players here, of course, the beginning of that Celtics dynasty. And, you know, as we're going to talk about here, the Hawks had a pretty good run as well. This is the first buzzer beater in NBA playoff history. There's one from Bob Harrison in the 1950 finals for the Lakers. It's a near half-court game winner. It's often described as a buzzer beater, but actually there was time left on the clock for that one. You'll see it. If you search for it, you'll see a lot of descriptions of it as a buzzer beater. Not technically a buzzer beater. Still, you know, impressive, great shot, but not a buzzer beater. So want to clarify that. This series, just, you know, really a doozy. Four games in the series had a margin of just 2 points in the finals. Three of them won by St. Louis, including obviously Game 6 here to tie it. The final one would also be a margin of two, but would not go St. Louis's way. getting into Cliff Hagan, big college star at Kentucky, actually ended up being involved in a scandal at Kentucky, a point shaving scandal that involved the 1951 national championship game. So the team was suspended for his senior season. Did end up managing to get drafted, though. He didn't get banned from this, unlike some of the future scandals. Was actually drafted by the Celtics, but had a commitment of 2 years in the military before his NBA career began. And when he was ready to join, the Celtics had the chance to draft Bill Russell. They did get the rights to Bill Russell. The Hawks actually drafted Bill Russell. So Hagan and Ed McCauley traded to the Hawks for the rights to Bill Russell. And, you know, Hagan, no slouch. I mean, obviously the Celtics won the trade, but, you know, the Hawks did get two Hall of Famers for it, including most of the career of Hagan, who was a two-time All-NBA second team, six-time All-Star in the NBA and the ABA. Helped the Hawks to a championship the next season in 1958, four finals appearances in 5 years. You know, pretty much was Robin to Bob Pettit's Batman, you know, kind of just a do-everything forward, you know, had a great hook shot, kind of filled in the gaps and let Bob Pettit, you know, be the star. You know, was 6'4", but he played bigger than his 6'4 stature. Actually, you know, his career really turned around in his rookie season because he was moved from guard where he was initially played to forward. And, you know, only averaged 5.5 points per game and 3.7 rebounds per game during the regular season. But in the playoffs, he upped that to 17 points per game and 11.2 rebounds per game. Yeah, and was really essential for the Hawks during this series.
Yeah, he's fantastic. Yeah, we're a podcast that always tries to have people, you know, it's very easy to just say, oh my God, can you believe the Hawks traded Bill Russell to the Celtics? Oh, the Celtics won so many. And it's true, obviously. Yeah, Bill Russell, one of the all-time greats. And obviously the Celtics, one of the all-time great dynasties. But yeah, Cliff Hagan and Ed McCauley, no slouches. And no, obviously the Celtics won that trade. But man, the Hawks got a lot out of those guys as well. I mean, like you said, they got two Hall of Famers. They got most of the career of Hagan. And it's not like they weren't, you know, in the mix as well. They, as you're saying right there, I mean, they, you know, were able to make finals. They were able to be one of the top teams in the NBA. So it's a lot of times it's very lazy. And again, it's not untrue that Celtics won that trade. But I do feel like, unfortunately, Cliff Hagan and Ed McCauley both kind of get, you know, cast aside as like, oh my God, can you believe they are the guys that got traded for Bill Russell? Ha ha ha. And it's not entirely fair because both guys had tremendous NBA careers, especially Hagan, who an all-time great that probably doesn't get his due.
Sure, absolutely. And in the series, you know, he'd already had really clutch performance in Game 3, had two key steals in the fourth quarter to kind of wrap that one up and give the Hawks a narrow win there. The play here, 2 seconds left. Bob Pettit misses a jumper, but Hagan manages to slip by Tom Heinsohn in the box out to tap it in. St. Louis runs off the court celebrating. Red Auerbach rushes the referee, says, no, hey, there should be time left in this game. You know, what are you doing? This is crazy. You know, there should be time left. We should get the ball back and get another shot. Doesn't happen. Referee rejects Red's argument. Apparently, 6 points was the largest margin of this game. That never went more than 6 points.
I could buy it, man. And that's when we talk about this being an all-time great series. Here are the scores of the game. Game one, St. Louis wins by two, 125-123. Game two, a blowout, 10 points. Boston wins. Right. Game three, St. Louis wins by two again.
Yeah.
Game four, Boston wins 123-118.
Yeah.
Game five, probably the only laugh for the entire thing. Boston wins 124-109. This game six, 2 points. Right. Game seven, as we said, one of the greatest NBA games of all time, 2 points. So you
have.
That's insane. What a nuts series. Insane.
Yeah. Yes. The Boston Globe's Jack Berry described it as the most spectacular and hardest fought of the greatest NBA final playoff series ever held. So, of course, you know, the league's only been around for 7 years, but hey, it's definitely one of those games, one of those series. That's certainly held up. Obviously, we don't have, you know, a lot of footage of it. So if you watch it, you know, how much would you enjoy? I don't know, but definitely the dramatics, you know, the closeness of it, the you know, all the back and forth twists and turns, you know, made it obviously very exciting for storytelling purposes. You know, Hagen, great player, also known for his tendency to get into fisticuffs, especially during his ABA stint, you know, and loose balls. There's a lot of good stories about him, you know, playing angry, let's say.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And, you know, Cliff Hagen might have played angry, but we know something that might have made him happy.
Oh, we do. And it is the Performance Package 4.0, Jason. The Olympics, Euros, yeah, baseball, major championships, and concerts are all in this summer. And you know what is not in, Jason? A wild and hairy bush. We know Cliff Hagen would not want to have a wild and hairy bush. He's You want to tame your pubes with help from our friends at Manscaped, the leaders in below the waist grooming. Their fourth generation performance package includes the brand new Lawnmower 4.0. If an athlete like Cliff Hagen treats their body like royalty, we should stop saying that. The estate of Cliff Hagen might be upset that we're using his name in this case. So this is not officially endorsed by the estate of Cliff Hagen, but if an athlete treats their body, it should be. If an athlete treats their body like royalty, why not treat your pubes like Olympic gold? Fellas, do the right thing, buy your balls, and join the 2 million men worldwide who trust Manscaped by going with the code FANSIDED20. You want to let us know what's in that perfect package 4.0, Jason?
Absolutely. Yeah. Inside, you're going to find Manscaped's Lawnmower 4.0 trimmer, the Weed Whacker ear and nose hair trimmer.
That's a clutch. That's awesome.
Oh, yeah. That's great. The Crop Preserver ball deodorant, the Crop Reviver toner, plus two free gifts: Performance boxer briefs and the Shed travel bag.
That's awesome. So you talk about a world-class dismount into a post-quarantine world. This package is the perfect package for your package. That was a lot of package in one sentence there. And peak performance and two more P's. What alliteration. In whatever sport you desire, as we said, the brand new Lawnmower 4.0 is here to take the podium. This fourth generation trimmer features a cutting-edge ceramic blade to reduce grooming accidents. Thanks to the advanced skin-safe technology, the Lawnmower 4.0 has a 7,000 RPM motor, new multifunction on and off switch that can engage a travel lock and gives you the ability to turn the 4,000K LED spotlight on and off when needed for a more precise shave. Did I mention this trimmer is waterproof as well? This package also comes with a weed whacker to chop the worst weeds up top in both your nose and ear. This tool is a lock to take home the gold in the biathlon, Jason. Yes, and it absolutely is also waterproof. Right. As well. So yeah, there's a lot of good stuff coming in this perfect package 4.0.
Absolutely. Yeah, this is just wonderful stuff here. Just, you know, so many things. Just, you know, you've got the you know, they've also thrown in two free gifts, you know, the performance package 4.0, the Manscaped boxers, the Shed travel bag, and, you know, you can get 20% off free shipping with the code FANSIDED20 at manscaped.com. That's 20% off and free shipping with the code FANSIDED20 at manscaped.com. Achieve pubic glory this year with Manscaped.
There it is. Pubic glory, folks.
Yes.
Pubic glory.
Pubic glory.
This Olympic season with Manscaped. FANSIDED20, manscaped.com, 20% off, plus free shipping. Let's go to a period where I don't know if this they may have embraced the hairy pubes at this time in 1979, but it's a different time, and now these days we don't embrace them as much. But in 1979, I think they may
still
have.
Okay.
But still okay, still allowed in society. But Larry Wright is the man we're going to talk about here. May 20th, 1979, game one of the
Larry Wright.
Larry Wright, yes.
Who is Larry Wright?
Who is Larry Wright? Yeah, we're going to talk about Michael Jordan and Dennis Johnson and Jerry West. We've talked about Cliff Hagen, and now we're going to talk about Larry Wright. So Larry Wright was a legend at Grambling, but he had pretty humble beginnings in the NBA. But on this night in 1979, the NBA Finals, he took over. This is between the Bullets and the Sonics. Key players for the Bullets: Bob Dandridge, Elvin Hayes, Wes Unseld, the Sonics, Gus Williams, Dennis Johnson, who we'll talk about in a bit, Jack Sikma, Paul Silas, Fred Brown. And yet, despite all those talented players, all those Hall of Famers, all those top-tier guys, it is the Larry Wright show here. On this night, he takes over. He scores 26 points off the bench in game one of the NBA Finals, and we'll talk about it a bit. His most important shots of the entire game. It took a little bit, but Wright had won a championship with the Bullets the season prior. Obviously, this is the rematch here, Bullets and Sonics, and he won it the season prior, but he'd only averaged 8.1 points per game and 19.1 minutes per game in the playoffs that year. But he wasn't exactly a nobody. I mean, we might not know who he is, and history may, you know, not really remember Larry Wright that much, but he wasn't a complete nobody. He had actually scored 43 points in a game back in October 1979. He had 30 a few months prior in January of 1979 as well. But, you know, at this time, he's still, you know, he's not those guys. As we said, you know, the 1979 Bullets, they have several guys you'd expect to take over and win them an NBA Finals game. You have Elvin Hayes, Bob Dandridge. Elvin Hayes averages 21.8 points per game in the regular season. Bob Dandridge, 20.4. Kevin Greavy, 15.5 points per game in the regular season. Future NBA executive Mitch Kupchak, he's got 14.6 points per game as well. Wes Unseld is starting to break down, but he's still, you know, he's freaking Wes Unseld. Like, you know, you could maybe rely on him to win you a game here at this point. But no, it is none of those guys. It is Larry Wright who steps up in game one and has the game and the moment of his lifetime. So not only does he hit that last shot that we're going to talk about here in a bit, he connects on 9 of his first 10 shots. He shoots 12 of 16 overall in the game. As far as kind of the final minutes of this and how we get to this point with Larry Wright, the Bullets control most of the game. They lead by 18 in the fourth. They feel like they have it in the bag. Yep. They do not. Lenny Wilkins' crew decides, screw this, we're not going down. They get a furious comeback. They tie the game at 97 with seconds left to go. Larry Wright drives to the basket. He's pretty much left open because it's Larry Wright. You're not going to guard Larry Wright. You're going to guard all those other guys that I mentioned. Dennis Johnson, though, quickly realizes, oh, crap, nobody's guarding Larry Wright. I'm going to go over there. And he blocks Larry Wright. Dennis Johnson does. And the Seattle Supersonics, they start celebrating. They've done it, but no, a referee runs in to say, no, 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 not so fast. Dennis Johnson, you committed a foul on Larry Wright. A personal foul. And this place is up for grabs. It's in Washington, so thank God, because I don't know what these referees would be able to. We're going to talk about it in a bit. The referees needed security to get off the court, and they were, you know, in favor of the home team, just to give you an idea of how things went. If this was in Seattle, I don't know if these guys make it out alive, because the Seattle Supersonics, every single one of them get off the bench and start screaming at this referee. Dennis Johnson is jumping up and down. He looks like seconds away from killing this man. Like, I honestly think, had they been in Seattle and had the crowd egged him on a little bit more, he may have done it. Or, you know, Dennis Johnson, he doesn't want to, you know, commit murder on for a basketball play, but he gets pretty close. He is just jumping up and down. Lenny Wilkins, who looks dapper as hell, by the way, in a fantastic suit here with some great great collars here. He runs out and he's just like, are you kidding me? You got Jack Sikma, who's just, these guys, they're dumbfounded. They say, how can you call a foul on this shot of all shots? And you watch the replay and it's not like, there's not no contact, but I don't know if there's enough contact to call a foul on a last second play like this. So, so it's tough. I'm with DJ on this one. I'm with the Sonics on this one. It seems a little tough, but does not matter. What happens anyway is the shot's going to happen. They're going to get the free throws. What I did love about this, the entire sequence from Larry Wright going for the shot to Dennis Johnson fouling him to the Sonics arguing to Larry Wright getting on the line and then Larry Wright hitting the free throws literally takes like 45 seconds. Like, can you imagine how long this would take in today's NBA game if they did this? This would take 45 minutes probably instead of 45 seconds. But all of this is happening, just pure chaos. So Wright goes to the line. He misses the first shot, but the crowd is not upset. The announcers are not upset because NBA rules at the time say you get three to make two, and he only had to make one. So he just had to make one of the next two to do it. He makes the second. Crowd starts celebrating. He pretty much gets ready to walk off the court and then realizes, I might as well take the third. Hits the third anyway just for a safe measure, and he does it. The Washington Bullets win the game. Larry Wright is the hero. Security comes to help the referees off the floor. As believe it or not, the Sonics players did not get over this in the next minute. They are still very upset. These referees get escorted off the court. Hot Rod Hundley runs down there to interview Larry Wright after the game. He's being mobbed by fans behind him. They're all just, you know, slapping hands and touching him on the back and doing all that sort of stuff. Larry Wright in the ultimate cool guy quote of all time, I'd say this is really just an all-timer. He says, well, what were you thinking? You know, Hot Rod Hundley says, what were you thinking when Dennis Johnson, you know, fouled you? And Larry Wright goes, I think it was a goaltend also. It's like, it was definitely not a goaltend either. But I love the idea that, like, whatever, foul or not, it was probably a goaltend too.
Shoot your shot, Larry Wright.
This is your moment, man. Go for it. But he just says he was cool, calm, collected. Hot Rod Hundley says, were you worried when you missed that first free throw? And he goes, well, no, because I had two more to go. So very odd. I mean, that's a rule in the NBA history that I always forget about. I always forget that it was a thing. And here was a big moment where it happened. But Larry Wright just kind of said, hey, I got three chances. I knew I was going to hit at least one. So that would be fine. So that is it. There's lit for Larry Wright. And a lot of people, I went to the YouTube video of this this highlight in this clip, and a lot of people were saying, hey, Jimmy Butler brought me here. 2020 brought me here. All that sort of stuff that you see in the comments. And I'm thinking, man, I don't remember. What connection does Jimmy Butler and Larry Wright have? I don't understand. And I forgot. And I forget a lot of things about the 2020 NBA season. But in the bubble, game two of the Eastern Finals, between the Heat and the eventual 2021 NBA champion Milwaukee Bucks. Congratulations to them. This game, the Heat win 116-114. Final few minutes of the game, Giannis Antetokounmpo fouls Jimmy Butler as time expires, and it led to one of the more surreal scenes in sports. Butler is at the free throw line, and nobody is on the floor with him because time had expired in the game. So it was very similar to this, where there was 0 seconds left on the clock when this guy got his free throws, Larry Wright, and the exact same thing happened with Jimmy Butler in the 2020 bubble, and that was the first time. It had not happened any time before that as well. First time a playoff game had been decided on free throws with the clock at zero since this game. This one takes place, obviously, in the NBA Finals. This one, or the other one, 2020. In the Eastern Conference Finals. But yeah, an awesome all-time moment for Larry Wright. Unfortunately, the Sonics, for Larry Wright, I should say, unfortunately, Sonics would storm back. Thanks to Dennis Johnson, he would redeem himself here. He would win NBA Finals MVP and help Sonics win their franchise's first and only NBA championship as well. And this is, I can't believe this is true, and I had to double, triple, quadruple check it, and it is absolutely true. This time, 1979, Seattle Supersonics, the most recent time that a Western Conference team not based in Texas or California has won an NBA title.
That's pretty amazing. That has not happened in either of our lifetimes.
It's and I was like, oh, and again, like Texas and California are very large states with a lot of teams. It's not unreasonable, but it's also like, oh man, there's a whole lot of teams that haven't won a title.
So, yeah,
hell, right. If Phoenix won this year, it would have broken that thing there. But anyway, yes. As far as Larry Wright, he played one more season in Washington before being dealt to the Detroit Pistons. Did not play all that well for the Pistons. He was fine, but not really. Just never really kind of would reach his highs of this game. He averaged 7.4 points per game in 1981. Just 1 year prior to the start of the Isaiah Thomas era as well. So he's in that weird kind of in-between period for the Pistons. And then by 1982, he skips across the Atlantic and starts for Banco di Roma in Italy. And then bounces around Italy for a few years, wins an Italian league championship in 1983. And then would go on to become the head coach at Grambling, assistant coach. And I think he's got a legacy. I think he's got four or five kids, and I think they all played college ball, and I think a few of them played professionally as well. So yeah, a good legacy for Larry Wright, but he'll always have this one moment, his all-time great moment for him, and an all-time great moment for the Washington Bullets franchise as well, even if the result ultimately didn't end up in a championship.
Yes. Yeah. Interesting one. Yeah. That's a cool, obviously a fun footnote in NBA history for a number of reasons. And next we'll go to somebody a little bit better known than Larry Wright, Jerry West. This is 1962, April 10th. This is game three of the series. It was tied 1-1, and Jerry West, quite the, I guess earning the, named Mr. Clutch here, the nickname that he had despite the Lakers, losing every series or every, finals that they were in until, finally breaking through in 1972. Yeah, so key players here, Celtics, you got Bill Russell, you got Bob Cousy, you got Tim Heinsohn, you got both the Joneses, Casey and Sam, you got Frank Ramsey. This year they were 60-20. Statistically, if you look at SRS, probably – in the record, probably the best team of the dynasty, in terms of performance during the season. Talent-wise, you could argue the 63 team because they had basically the same roster, plus they had a rookie, John Havlicek, and were almost as good statistically. So, anyway, pretty much at the peak of that. And the Lakers, this is actually their first finals appearance, I believe, since Minneapolis, with, Baylor and West, and they combined for 75 of the Lakers, 117 points in this game. West himself had 36 of them. And they also, you've got Frank Selvey, you got Rudy LaRusso, Jim Krebs, Hot Rod Hundley. So, not a murderer's row on the Lakers side. You're very top heavy, where the Celtics, of course, have the great balance. And yes, so, West already before this moment with 4 seconds left and Sam Jones trying to inbound Bob Cousy, he'd actually scored 4 straight points to tie the game at 115. And then, as we mentioned, Sam Jones trying to inbound the ball, but West intercepts the pass at midcourt, and then he runs about 30 feet and beats the clock for layup. The ball actually dramatically bouncing off of the rim before falling into the basket. Came close to actually bouncing out, but goes in the basket. They're in L.A. The crowd goes nuts. And we got Red Auerbach vociferously protesting and say, hey, there's no way that West, that he could have reached the other basket in so little time. The clock, you know, the clock's always working against Red.
Red always is well aware of what the clock is, who's available. I mean, he is.
And what it should be. Yes.
Yeah. This guy gets it. I mean, and believe it or not, the referees did not listen to him in this case either. But
either too much or too little, you know.
Right. Nobody else knows what's going on with the clock except for Red. Why don't they just ask him every time? What's the clock? What should we put it at? Every time out, every stoppage of play, stop and look at Red. Say, hey, what time do you want on the clock there?
What time should it be? Yeah. I mean, right. Yes. He's got like just the perfect internal clock. Right. It's after
like a dog. West. Yeah, he's got great internal clock.
Much like a dog. afterward, Jerry mobbed by his teammates and fans. In the video, you can see the mob surrounding him as he heads into the tunnel, and it kind of leads to like an awkward moment because this is back when there's only one tunnel. There's not separate entrances for teams in most arenas. So both the Lakers and the Celtics have to go, through the same tunnel. So you kind of see like the Celtics sort of awkwardly like leaving the crowd. So you see like sad Celtics players and like happy Lakers players and crazy fans, like all like trying to like get through like one area.
I'm always amazed that there weren't more like all out brawls. You know what I mean? Like just, right. I cannot imagine like you just lost a game and this other team's cheering and that you just want to turn around and just deck them. You know what I mean? Just be like, screw you. Like,
yeah.
And there's like fans bumping into you and stuff and everyone's going nuts. Yeah. Like how do you not just turn around and punch people?
I don't understand. Yeah. I mean, obviously it did happen occasionally, but yes, you are surprised that didn't happen.
Like every game. Yeah.
However, despite the heroics here, the Celtics, surprise, end up winning the series. In fact, the Lakers were up 3-2. They won game 5 in Boston. They were poised to win this, but it did not happen for them. The Celtics were able to win game 6 in L.A., game 7 in Boston to buy 3 points just to win that one. Very close one. And of course, Jerry West, we don't really need to get super in detail on Jerry West, one of the great players in NBA history, the great guard of this era.
He's the logo. You can look it up on your own.
Right. Yeah. We've covered Jerry West, in detail before. So, we're not getting a lot, but of course, when you think of buzzer beaters in the finals, that there's actually an even more famous instance in my mind, 1970, in the finals against the Knicks, West ends up making a basket from past half court in 1970 that only tied the game, however, sending the game into overtime. The Knicks end up winning that game in overtime. I believe that was game 5. I can't remember off the top of my head, but that's obviously a pivotal moment in that game, a dramatic shot, but of course did not win the game, so it doesn't count for our purposes, but still worth an asterisk, which we've just given.
Absolutely. And as we said, we're doing kind of clinching games or game clinchers or here or whatever. So, that is a quote unquote buzzer beater in the finals, it didn't just sent the game to overtime, didn't actually win the game for the team. So,
correct. Yes.
Let's move on to our next one here. The aforementioned Dennis Johnson. We talked about him all the way back in 1979. He would eventually win the finals MVP that year, redeeming himself after a horrendous finals the year prior, one of the all-time bad NBA finals ever, including the 1978 finals, Game 7, which was not so good. And that's DJ's history, Dennis Johnson's history in the clutch. Here, very, very good. 1984 finals, very, very good. And as we said, 1978 NBA finals, Game 7. Really, really, really bad, as in he didn't make any shots, which is not good.
No.
Especially when you take more than one and more than two and more than three. And he took a lot of shots and he didn't make any of them. So did not go well for Dennis Johnson.
Just for the record, 0 of 14.
Yes, which is not one, not two, not three, not four, not five, not six, not 10, not 12. No, he missed 14 shots and didn't make any of them.
Game 6, he was 4 of 16. So,
shoot, baby. You got to shoot through it eventually. But
It took
a year for him to shoot through it, but he got it.
Things worked out in 79. Yes, absolutely. And again, here in 84 and 85, did well as well. So
Absolutely. Yeah, but this is game 4. Series is tied 2-2. It is the Lakers. It is the Celtics. It's peak 80 Celtics here. Larry Bird, Kevin McHale, Robert Parrish, Dennis Johnson. ML Carr's towel and weird hair. Yeah. Greg Kite, you know,
yeah, just legendary Greg Celtics. Kite. Yeah, who doesn't love Greg Kite?
Legendary Celtics. Yeah. And peak 80s Lakers as well. Magic Johnson, James Worthy, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, Kurt Rambis, Byron Scott. Also pretty interesting and deep bench too. Bob McAdoo on the bench this year, as well as Michael Cooper. Is kind of rounding out the very two really, really deep teams, two very, very good teams. And I just want to, at least for a second here, talk about Dennis Johnson, because his story is an all-timer. And I think a lot of people, you know him for the 84 finals and know him for here and know him for the, you know, finals MVP and all that sort of stuff. But his story and how he got here is pretty nuts. So he graduated from Dominguez High School in Compton, California, which, believe it or not, a lot of NBA players come from that. I initially know Tyson Chandler as a guy from there. I didn't realize also Cedric Ceballos, also Brandon Jennings, also Tayshaun Prince. I mean, that is a hell of a reunion team right there. I mean, that team's doing pretty well. If you take, you could put that up against any non kind of academy high school anywhere in the country, and I think that's a pretty damn good team there and pretty good alum there. Cedric Ceballos, Tyson Chandler, Brandon Jennings, Tayshaun Prince, and Dennis Johnson. It kind of works positionally as well. It's not bad.
That's not bad.
Got everyone there. You know, Brandon Jennings at the two, Dennis Johnson at the one. You got Cedric Ceballos at the three. Tayshaun's going to be a little out of position at the four, but you can make it work in the modern NBA. And then you got Tyson Chandler defending the rim. That's not bad.
Yeah, I'm surprised they don't have like a Compton like big three team. You know what I mean? You could get like Tayshaun and Jennings Tyson Chandler's like a big three team. I mean, Ice Cube. You know, he's the commissioner of big three. You would think, they would. That would be a natural.
I'll DM. Mr. Cube and tell him about this. But anyway, Johnson measures at just 5'9 when he's playing in high school. When I say he graduated, he gets a minute or two each game in high school. Like, he's nothing. So after high school, he's not going to play college basketball because he doesn't play very much. He's 5'9". He doesn't really play. He works several odd jobs. He gets a $2.75 hour job as a forklift driver. Plays with his brothers in summer league games after work. During this time, he grows to a height of 6'3", which is definitely going to help you. And Jim White, who was the coach at Los Angeles Harbor College, was watching Johnson play street basketball and said, "Hey, this guy, he's great at defense. And I can teach him offense. He's got size. This guy can be good." White asks him to enroll. Johnson gave up his jobs and go for it. And in that first year, he helps the college win a JUCO state title, Los Angeles Harbor College. And DJ, believe it or not, was not the easiest to get along with at that time ever, in his life. He's thrown off the team three times in 2 years after the end of his JUCO career. Two universities offer him scholarships. Azusa Pacific University eventually would just become Pacific University, and Pepperdine University. Johnson chooses the latter, and in his only year there, he averages 15.7 points, 5.8 rebounds per game, and 3.3 assists per game. He continues that reputation for being a great defender, and then after that year, makes himself eligible for the 1976 NBA draft. Skeptical that any team would take him, but the Seattle Supersonics take a chance on him, select him in the second round of the 1976 NBA draft. Seattle is, of course, where he gets the nickname DJ, which I think a lot of people might not know. They might just think it's a Boston Celtics name. No, it was Seattle where he got the name because play-by-play announcer for Seattle, Bob Blackburn, has to come up with it to distinguish DJ from his teammates, John Johnson and Vinny Johnson. So you cannot get away with just saying Johnson because there are three men that are Johnson on the team. So Blackburn refers to John Johnson as JJ, Vinny Johnson as VJ, and Dennis Johnson as, yes, you guessed it, DJ. So as we mentioned here, Johnson has a very rough Game 7 in the 1978 NBA Finals, misses all 14 of his field goal attempts. He'd make up for it the next year, scoring 32 points a Game 4 overtime victory, then drops 21 points in the decisive Game 5 to become the NBA Finals MVP and help the Seattle Supersonics win the NBA Finals. And as we said, tough to get along with at times. He clashes with Lenny Wilkins, and he is traded to Phoenix for Paul Westphal. Unfortunately, the Sonics finished 22 games worse in the next season, so he obviously played a big role in that team after two successful years on the court. And guess what? Two frustrating years off the court. He has clashes with teammates, coaches, and owners. Johnson is on the move again, this time to the Boston Celtics for Rick Roby and draft picks. But this time it kind of all clicks and it all works. Dennis Johnson's offense and poise and defense helps the Celtics defeat the Lakers in 1984 with Johnson in particular. He's able to limit Magic Johnson to a lot of another Johnson here. MJ, we'll call Magic Johnson MJ. Yeah, not confusing at all there. I can't imagine there's any other MJ in NBA history that we would confuse here. So yeah, we'll call Magic Johnson MJ. We'll call Dennis Johnson DJ, and that should make make it very, very easy to figure out here. But he limits him to low scoring, and really kind of helps, as I've said, the Celtics win the 1984 finals. 1985 season, Johnson continues to play great defense, earns all defensive second team honors while averaging 16.9 points per game and 7.3 assists per game as well. He's a key part of this team. Celtics and the Lakers meet in the 1985 NBA finals again. And DJ's big moment here comes in game four. Scores tied at 105. Teammate Larry Bird has the ball in the last seconds. Magic Johnson had just hit a shot to tie the game. It's kind of an iconic moment as well, where Magic gets this rebound, immediately puts up a shot, and he just starts pumping his fist as he walks his way down the court. Bird has the ball. He smartly gets double-teamed by Kareem Abdul-Jabbar and Magic Johnson because, of course, you would probably want to guard Larry Bird. Bird passes the open teammate, who's Dennis Johnson, and Dennis Johnson sinks the 19-foot buzzer beater. The Lakers try to call a timeout, but time has expired. Game over. Dennis Johnson hits the game winner here, wins the buzzer beater. Eventually, Lakers would get the last laugh, though. They would win the series in six games. Johnson would get 16 points per game and 9.5 assists per game in the series as well. But unfortunately, the Celtics did not win this game. But hey, this is not going to be the end for the heroics of Dennis Johnson. The next year, he's going to have the very famous Eastern Conference Finals thing where he hits the infamous late-game layup. Larry Bird steals the inbound pass, passes it to DJ. DJ gets the layup. So, yeah, the heroics, they're still going to be there. And don't worry, the Celtics are going to be okay. They're going to win another finals. So,
something a little surprising, Red Auerbach did not complain about the clock management of this game.
You know, you guys got it good.
Yeah.
The Lakers call timeout. He goes, refs, you nailed this one, guys. Thank you for finally listening to my advice. You
appreciate it. That's good stuff. Yes. So, definitely good times there. We go next to Julius Erving. This is the ABA Finals Game 1, May 1st, 1976. This would end up being the final ABA Finals as the merger would occur later that summer. Key players for the Nets, you've got Erving, you got Super John Williamson, you got Brian Taylor, you got the immortal Rich Jones. You have future NBA coach Kim Hughes. For the Nuggets, a little bit more of a star-studded cast. You got David Thompson, who was a rookie and just, you know, an incredible standout. Bobby Jones, Dan Issel, Marvin Webster, and then longtime Nuggets ABA original Byron Beck. Been with the Nuggets, the Denver franchise, who'd been the Rockets and then became the Nuggets during that time. So, so far, every single finals buzzer beater that we've described in this episode has come for a team that lost the series, but no longer. The Nets won this series, and Dr. J helped get them there in game one. 45 points in this game, 12 rebounds. You know, Irving's definitely, you know, already been carrying the franchise since he got there, you know, helped carry them to the 1974 ABA title. They looked like they were going to be headed there for a follow-up in 1975, but they were shockingly upset by Marvin Barnes and the Spirits of St. Louis. We've talked about that in previous episodes. So the Nets decide, hey, we're going to, you know, we're going to shuffle things around. And they got made some offseason trades with the Spurs that ended up getting them Sven Nader, Chuck Terry, Kim Hughes, and Rich House Jones from the Spurs. They gave up Larry Cannon, Mike Gale, and Billy Paltz. Idea was, hey, we needed some more rebounding. Then they later traded Nader to the Virginia Squires for Jim Eakins. They also got Ted McLean from Kentucky, you know, kind of a veteran from that 75 Colonels team that won the championship. So Nets still stay strong in the regular season, 55 games, but definitely like Irving, they don't quite have as much scoring punch anymore. I mean, they still got Super John there. We still got, you know, Brian Taylor's still a great guard. So they have talent, but not quite as much. You know, like Doc's having to do more than he had to do, you know, previously. Which, you know, is bad because he's a great player. Nuggets, in the meantime, in their second straight 60-plus win season under Coach Larry Brown, and hey, they added two future Hall of Famers, David Thompson and Dan Issel from the Colonels, to just won the championship to an impressive crew of young talent, and they got Marvin Webster, we got the other guys that we talked about as well. And speaking of Webster, he had actually tied this game leading to the Nets having the final possession with just a few seconds left at 118-118. And there's video of this one too. Very coolly, Irving catches the inbounds pass and just, drills a baseline jumper very easily, very, very, almost nonchalantly, we should say. So, This is in Denver. The Nets end up, they win this series in six games, but all of them, within single digit margins. It was a tightly contested series. The Nets had to make a big comeback in game six to win the championship at home. And Irving in the series, he would average 37.7 points per game, 14.3 rebounds, 5.3 assists, led his team in all the five major statistical categories, which I believe the only person to do that in a finals was LeBron James in 2015. So pretty special company right there. And definitely, of course, Irving, lots of standout moments in his career, but again, doesn't really, doesn't get much better than hitting a buzzer beater to win a finals game.
Absolutely. Yeah. And if you watch the video of this, as you said, it's so calm and so cool that I remember I was watching and I was like, okay, well, when's the buzzer beater? That's it. That's the buzzer beater. Cause He just dribbles and just launches and just hits his shot. He's just like, yeah, I made it. Of course I did. And there's not this hysteria that you get a lot of. It's just like, yeah, no, I just won the game. Cause I'm Dr. J. I'm cool. He just rises up, hits the shot. It's over. It's really, really, it just perfectly encapsulates this era of Dr. J. Just the coolest. Just the coolest motherfucker in the world. Rises up, the big fro, hits the shot, boom, we're good. Yeah. Let's go home. Let's party. Let's go. Yeah. I love it. It's great stuff there. As you said, that the 2015 comparison to LeBron James, we only got to lead his team in all major statistical categories. That, of course, was the year where it was LeBron, and then the second best player was Matthew Dellavedova because everybody else was hurt. So, an all time great series from LeBron. Obviously, it didn't work out. Golden State gets wins the finals, but just an awesome series as well. So, yeah, for Dr. J to be in that company, having watched that series live and see what LeBron was doing in that time, and like you said, those numbers 37.7 points per game, 14.3 rebounds per game, 5.3 assists. I mean, it's just that's insane stuff from Dr. J there.
Yeah, for sure.
Then we'll go to our final buzzer beater here. It's been this long since one has happened. Michael Jordan, June 1st, 1997. Game 1 of the 1997 NBA Finals. Utah Jazz versus the Chicago Bulls. Key players in this series. And this, of course, is not, they'd rematch in 1998. And I will say, as I'm kind of, doing notes for this and recapping and going over this series, 1998 gets its, everybody regards that as like one of the all-time great NBA Finals ever. And that was one because it was theater. Everybody knew the Bulls were done. Everybody knew that Michael Jordan was done. It was the Jazz going for it again. It was the rematch. I mean, it's the one that it was probably the biggest pop culture NBA Finals of all time. And the ratings reflect that as well. I mean, just the ratings, just a stupid amount of people watching these games, 38 to 40 million people watching game 7 or game 6 or whatever. Just crazy stuff. It's great theater. The 1997 NBA Finals, though, I would say probably better basketball being played. In general, I mean, both teams, I think, were just a little bit better in this year. And there was a lot of really fun games and a lot of really fun, back and forth, games in the series. It just didn't have the same theater as the 1998 finals. But I always want to give a little credit to the 97 finals. A really, really fun series. But anyway, key players are going to be the same for pretty much both series. For Chicago Bulls, you have Michael Jordan, Scottie Pippen, Dennis Rodman, and Tony Kukoc is kind of leading the Bulls. The Jazz, similarly, Karl Malone, John Stockton, Jeff Hornacek, Byron Russell. There's good players on both benches, but it's really those guys. And it's really largely the top two guys leading everything. In the Bulls, it's Jordan, Pippen, and Rodman. And I guess Kukoc gets a decent amount of credit there. And the Jazz are pretty much 100% Malone and Stockton with a little bit of help, from the other guys as well. But it's not Greg Oesterstedt that's leading these guys to the NBA Finals. It's Malone and it's Stockton. Sure. The final shot here is going to be Michael Jordan hitting a shot against Byron Russell.
Who knew? I heard that before.
A bad omen for the Jazz in the future. It gives the Chicago Bulls an 84-82 victory. Yes, 84-82. Going into this series, though, the Bulls and the Jazz want to combine 133 regular season games, the second most in finals history. Chicago comes into this game just barely missing back-to-back 70-win seasons and had to settle for a tremendously disappointing 69-13 record. Just hysteria in Chicago of what's wrong with the Bulls.
Why even bother at that point?
Right. They should have just sat the
playoffs. Cancel the finals. Yeah. Right. There's no point. Yeah.
What is, I mean, this team is, there's got to be answers here. 69-13 is not good enough. It's not good enough.
No.
Come on, guys. Get it together. But anyway, the Bulls get to the playoffs. They sweep the Washington Bullets in the first round. They beat the Atlanta Hawks. Your Atlanta Hawks in five games.
My Atlanta Hawks, yes.
Yeah. America's team. You love the 1997 Atlanta Hawks. Yeah. and then defeated the Miami Heat in five to make their second straight NBA Finals. The Jazz, they finished 1997 with a franchise record 64 wins. MVP Karl Malone, they finally break through to the top of the Western Conference, and we'll talk about their finals and or their path to the finals. And if you listen to previous episodes, you might know that, hey, I remember why they got to the finals. And yes, they sweep the Clippers in the opening round. They beat the Lakers in five games. So they take down both LA teams, and then, as we discussed in the prior episode of the series, they put the Houston Rockets away with John Stockton's buzzer beater in Game 6 of the Western Conference Finals to get the Utah Jazz finally to an NBA Finals after many, many years of getting so close, but never over the hump. And this is the Bulls' fifth Finals appearance of the decade, and this is the Jazz' first ever appearance in an NBA Finals. But as far as this game one, the Bulls trailed by one in the fourth. They were able to grab an 81-79 lead after Scottie Pippen blocks Antoine Carr, then made a three-pointer with 1 minute and 11 seconds remaining in the game. John Stockton comes back and answers with a three of his own with 51.7 seconds left in the game to give Utah an 82-81 lead. Michael Jordan then gets fouled. He goes to the line. He makes only one of two free throws.
Oh, wow.
I thought this guy was clutch.
I thought so too, but apparently not. Yeah.
There's ice water in those veins. There's no ice water. He just choked.
No. Yeah.
35.8 seconds left. Game is tied at 82. Then Karl Malone is fouled by Dennis Rodman with 9.2 seconds left. A huge blunder. How could you foul Karl Malone with 9.2 seconds left to go, and gives Utah a chance to get the lead? And this is a very famous moment here where Scottie Pippen says that he walks up to Karl Malone and says, "Just remember, the mailman doesn't deliver on Sundays."
Boom.
And then Carl steps up to the line and misses both free throws. He did not deliver on this Sunday. Jordan gets the rebound, quickly calls a timeout, 7.5 seconds left. And you know who's getting the ball here. And like we talked about in the prior series, prior game winners against the Cavaliers with Michael Jordan. I mean, you know Jordan's probably taking the shot. I mean, I guess he's passed to Paxton. Yeah. You know, later where he's going to pass in the series, he's going to pass to Steve Kerr for big shots. But I don't know. I take my chances with John Paxson or Steve Kerr. I'm probably going to bring somebody else to Michael Jordan. But no, he gets the ball. He dribbles a bunch. Then he launches a 20-footer, and it goes in. And the Bulls win. Jordan casually pumps his fist in triumph. It's an iconic image, you know, and obviously in his career. And it is over. Game one goes to the Bulls. Brian Williams, Chicago Bulls player, says the final play was, "Give the ball to Michael and get out of the way," which is exactly what Doug Collins said about the iconic "the shot" play. Was
without the expletive, but yes.
Give Jordan the ball and get the fuck out of the way was that one. Michael Jordan says, "I was surprised that Russell was the only one on me. Since they didn't double team me, I took a crossover dribble to the left, stopped, and took my shot, and that was it." Jerry Sloan says, Utah Jazz coach, of course, Jerry Sloan says, "We thought we tried to play him as straight as we could. We probably made a mistake."
Hey.
I would think you did. I would say you probably did. And this was another iconic game in what would eventually become a very iconic, triumphant, dramatic six games. Game five was the famous flu game, and game six featured a really great NBA Finals finish as Scottie Pippen knocks away an inbound pass, passes it to Tony Kukoc, who dunks the ball with about a second left on the clock. He dunks, he puts his arms in the air, the finals are over, the crowd goes nuts, the sold-out United Center, just really, really cool stuff. But 97 NBA Finals starts out great with this Game 1 buzzer beater and is great pretty much the entire way through as the Jazz and Bulls have the first of their two iconic NBA Finals matchups here in 1997. So.
Well, it's interesting. Yeah, the Bulls win this game by two. They win Game 5 by two, and they win Game 6 by four. So really close margins in their wins, you know, three to four wins here. I mean, they won Game 2 by 12. But, I kind of forgot how tight, you know, most of the games were in the series. You know, I mean, you kind of think of the Bulls and Jazz as one-sided. Obviously, the Bulls winning both those series and neither one going to Game 7. But, obviously the Jazz put up a pretty tough fight.
Absolutely. Yeah, it's just I think this series just doesn't get enough credit for being as good as it is, just because 98 is so iconic and so filled with histrionics and drama, and you got the Last Dance and all that sort of stuff. But give 97 its due. 97's a great, great all-time series.
Yeah, absolutely. Some good stuff. So and speaking of good series, I've enjoyed this look at the playoff buzzer beaters. You know, it's been fun to dig into some of these. Definitely a fun topic to do. I enjoy every show that we do, Rich. I mean, but I especially enjoyed doing the series and digging into some cool stuff.
Yeah, this is a great. I mean, you had this idea pretty early on in the playoffs of, hey, let's do buzzer beaters, and I didn't realize there would be as many cool, fun stories as there were. I thought a lot of them would just be like, yeah, you guys scored a shot. But a lot of cool stories, a lot of fun, interesting stuff, a lot of stuff to dig into. So I hope everybody enjoyed this as well, because I enjoy doing them and researching them as well.
Cool. Cool. Yeah. And, you know, thanks everyone, of course, for, you know, who listens to the podcast, who, you know, gives us feedback. You can find us on Facebook and Twitter at Over and Back NBA. And, you know, you can also, you know, we're part of the Step Back at Fansided. You find lots of great NBA content there. You know, if you're into what you're doing, listen, you know, give us a rating or review on one of the podcast platforms. If we're not on one that you like, let us know and we'll try to get there. And yeah, thanks everybody for listening, and we're back again soon.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Save big on brunch for mom, all in the Kroger app. Get 16-ounce packs of flavorful Angus 90% lean ground sirloin for $4.99 each with a digital coupon. Then buy two, get two free on 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.